Friday, so I can slam it on.
What time are you going to court on Friday?
It's supposed to be at 8:30, but we're going to be there at 8 o'clock, so they don't do this again until...
Courtroom roulette? You're never sure which court it's going to go to?
Yeah, they said it's going to be at the Superior Court this time.
Same one that they tricked us into not being at this time. So, yeah, we need some public support, and we need a lawyer that's not a public pretender. We need somebody that'll actually fight for us. These people aren't doing a thing except for trying to steal my children away from me, as far as I'm concerned.
You have a phone number people can call?
Yeah. 325-4335.
325-4335.
4335.
So if you have any...
31 area code.
Any attorneys out there want to be helpful, give a call to Orly and Stacy Jones. I got
325-4335.
And you can also, on another subject entirely, we have two people who've talked to a guy who... And before we get to that other subject, let's finish up with this subject. We've been listening, of course, to an interview with Stacy and Orly Jones. And on the line with us is Roxanne Acquistapace. Hi, Roxanne.
Good morning again.
Hey, Roxanne. How's the yard sale going?
Oh, well, I actually have two customers because, you know, unless I was talking on the phone, I probably wouldn't have had any.
Well, there you are.
You know how Murphy's Law is.
Well, we could actually broadcast your address and send customers to you.
Yeah,
like.
Yard sale at 431 6th Avenue in the harbor. Come and get it.
That's a non-commercial thing. Don't throw me out for Radio Collective. Roxanne, you run a sort of an advocacy service where you're concerned with
it's
the...
It's not sort of an advocacy service. It's a real advocacy service.
Sort of a real advocacy service. I'm groping for the name of the group.
Independent Advocacy,
Thank
and
you.
We do not allow any groping here, Mr. Schwarzenegger.
Hey, Arnie is my pal. I don't want to hear him criticized on a public show. And besides, we won't get into that. So what about the groping situation with the CPS? Are you groping?
It's a gripping situation.
They're gripping you.
Well, you know, there is so many things that have come up. I'm just going to start. Like, I'm not going to go in order because it's so confusing.
Go ahead.
But the day that they took the children on this case, there is a report by Parks and Recreation. It happened at a state park. The report has never appeared in court, and it's not in the court records. And CPS keeps saying that it was never typed up. It's still being typed 6 months later. And I just called the Sunset Beach to find out, what's the deal, you know? And they told me that report had to be typed the day the ranger went home. That report has been done since the very day the children were taken. So I'm quite suspicious because now I feel that there must be something in that report that CPS does not want the judge to see. Probably that there was no just cause. And so that's what I'm after now. I'm after that report because Stacy and Orly are very passive many times. You know, someone says, well, the report isn't typed and, you know, that they accept that. Now I'm saying even the judge has asked for it and has been told that the report isn't typed. He wants to see it. So
this is Judge Yance?
Yes.
The same judge that doesn't allow you in the courtroom?
That's right.
The same judge that doesn't allow anybody?
He doesn't allow anyone in the courtroom.
Although he could. On one occasion he allowed me in the courtroom, and he said when I talked to him later as to why he was excluding me from such hearings, the CPS doesn't like it.
Well, it's not about not liking or whatever. I mean, God, if people had witnesses, how could you take their kids away?
Well,
So the hostess that was there that day at the park is now working in Santa Barbara, and so we're hoping that she will be a witness, that there was nothing happening there and there was nothing wrong. I don't, you know, we're really, because they're not from this area, we don't really have a lot of witnesses, and CPS is counting on them. So anyway, that's one lie. I have made this case many times that it's not my job, I don't consider it my job to decide if people should have their kids back or their kids taken. But what I see my job is that due process is followed, that witnesses, that things get into the court records that should be there, you know, and not be held back. For instance, Stacy's lawyer has held back documents that she wanted, that she thought were being put into the record on her behalf, and they were not.
This is Stacy's lawyer, not the lawyer that's supposed to represent the interests of the kids or the CPS lawyer.
Well, see, Stacy didn't present those papers to the children's lawyer because she doesn't have access. She's not supposed to contact the children's lawyer.
My point, though, is that the lawyer that's supposed to represent her interests is denying her the right. This isn't some opponent lawyer. This is her lawyer appointed for her, right?
I consider her a heinous person. And I think that you'll get an idea of her personality when I tell you this. She told Stacy that, you know, that they should just stop talking about the abuse that their children suffered. And she said, because she said it's probably nothing worse than your husband hasn't done to them anyway. Can you imagine? Number one, I think it shows her prejudice against the family. But number two, it's okay to cover up a child abuse. It's okay for CPS and everybody to cover it up because these kids were probably abused anyway, so it's no big deal.
What's the name of this attorney?
Carol Kirk.
Have you had any other experiences with her that might lead you to be concerned about her?
No, but I've had so many bad experiences with her since the beginning of this case, since I got on this case, which was early. When did I get on this case? In June? Early June? Early June, that, you know, I actually believe that she needs the mental health evaluation. You know, I mean, she's really a scary person.
Well, maybe CPS can farm her out to a foster parent.
Well, gosh, I just can't imagine how somebody can condone. I mean, to say that you should drop this because you're making people mad when supposedly they took those children to protect them. So, this is another interesting thing. They wouldn't let the kids talk to their parents about it. But when they were talking about it, it happened in front of the supervising social worker for the visit, who's a mandated reporter. When bruises were found all over the baby, they were shown to a supervising social worker named Miguel, who was supervising the visit that day. That CPS is now saying, because Orly actually spoke up in court saying nothing's been done about this, that it had been his and Stacy's job to report it to law enforcement. Now, can you imagine such a thing when they're all mandated reporters and the parents have no access to their children? I mean, they've got a foster mom sitting on a speakerphone, supervising phone calls. This family gets to talk to their children twice a week, two children at a time, for 10 to 15 minutes. That's about 7.5 minutes per child. That's all the contact they get other than the visit.
And the visit is, what, 1 hour a week?
It's 2 hours because there's four children. But one of them is a three-year-old. And I'm amazed at how bonded she has stayed. I mean, when they call her, you can hear her little voice going, "Mommy, Mommy, take me home, home, Mommy, Daddy, home." I mean, she's been there since April, and she's still crying to come home the minute she hears their voice. So it's amazing to me that she's been able to stay that bonded, because for someone so little, I think, was she two when she went in, Orly? She was two when she went into foster care, so she's just barely three, that she's been able to maintain it. It's very sad.
So if this were a case of private individuals seizing children and holding them, let's suppose it was a cult or something, and maybe we can look at it that way to some extent.
I think we should look at it that way.
You know, there would be the remedy would be you'd call the cops, you'd send in a bounty hunter, you'd go to a deprogrammer, whatever you do, and you'd get your kid out of there, and then you'd sue the people involved for damages, perhaps, or whatever. But in this situation, even if you're held in jail for a crime, you can apply for a writ of habeas corpus. But what recourse do Orly and Stacy have after, what is it, May, June, July, August, September, October? We're going into the sixth month now.
Well, I didn't know until I talked to David Beauvais, but the time had passed. The jurisdictional hearing had happened, that actually they could have applied for habeas corpus. for writ of habeas corpus, but I don't know exactly what that would have entailed. Because it was past news, it was too late.
So in other words, but for those in the future whose children are taken away, you can apply to the court for a bring the kids to court to show me the bodies sort of thing.
Yes, and this is the thing, what needs to come out in this case is that you never entrust originals or documents that you want to see the judge to see to either your court-appointed attorney or to your social worker. You always go to the courthouse and have it entered directly into the court. It will be dated and time-stamped, and you ask for a receipt. You have your copy there, and you have them date and time-stamp it. So it's your proof of the date you put that document in.
I know sometimes, however, that may be difficult in our court system, because when I tried to do that with the district attorney's office, I was repeatedly refused by the woman behind the desk, and until I refused to move, they called out the police. I whipped out my tape recorder, and half an hour later, I had my receipt. But it took a massive amount of standing up and doing so in a fashion that a lot of people would be rather uncomfortable doing.
Was that in the district attorney's office?
That was right in front of the second floor of the county building at the district attorney's office, yeah.
Okay, well, we were in the court, the office where the court papers are. I don't think that's the same.
Perhaps it's better over there.
But it's not better. I mean, they won't even, if you're the party named in an action, you are able to go in and look at your files. Stacy, his wife, is named in the action. They would not let her in without Orly because she was just the stepmother. He had to come back. When he came back, they wouldn't let them in, period. They wouldn't let him look at his own files. I mean, there's been all kinds of monkey business. There is an unusual order on the file that the father only may view the file. I mean, that's unheard of. And that the court says, well, the judge must have put it there because no one else can put it there. But no one seems to know who put it there. There's no mention of the child abuse in any of the papers whatsoever. The couple has requested the child abuse investigation logs from their children's child abuse. The request goes unanswered. Their lawyers don't get it for them. CPS won't break with it. There's so many dirty tricks in this case, and I've always maintained if CPS has a valid case, they wouldn't need to make up all these stories, put up all these roadblocks. They just wouldn't need to do it.
So I mean, the allegations that the bite marks on the 3-year-old's back, the bruises on the body, none of this appear in any of the reports in the court record.
Nothing. Not the boys choking, nothing. And you know, and it's just so funny that the child did it herself, is clumsy.
Well, this shows even more the culpability of Stacy and Orly for raising such bizarre children.
Oh, yeah, that they can bite themselves in the back.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
But the stress has gotten so great for the two girls that the older one started sucking on her arms, like giving herself big hickeys, just sucking and sucking in the same place out of stress. And now the baby who's watched her is doing it also. I mean, this is like, you know, some sort of torture.
Now, if a school did this, if these kids were in a boarding school, the school could be sued for damages. Of course, can CPS be sued for damage or the foster parents?
Oh, I believe that they are definitely culpable, which is why they won't let the kids talk to their parents unsupervised. The parents, you know, like, they can be in court all day, and the kids will say, well, what did you do today? They're not allowed to say they were in court. They can't even say the court word. They can't talk about anything legal.
What if Stacy and Orly bring a camera and a tape recorder and try to record and photograph these injuries and these accounts?
They're no longer allowed to tape visits or, you know, bring any kind of recording, which a camera would be considered recording.
This is by court order from our very own Judge Robert, I'm a friend of the CPS, Yance.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oh, this was actually a different, who was the judge? I'm sorry, Stevenson? Was it Stevenson?
Stevens, friend.
Stevenson was the judge on this.
Probably Stevens.
Stevens, okay.
And it could be a new Stevenson, but Stevens is the traditional.
It's probably someone who's been there.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like you can't win. And Orly asked, he said, so I have no way to protect myself. from these bizarre stories like we're threatening to murder our children or whatever. We have no way. And the judge didn't answer him.
But at least he spoke up in court. I know we had a discussion about this a month or two back about, you know, they always tell you to be very well behaved, let your attorneys speak, you know, keep a mild demeanor, don't interrupt. But in fact, I'd suggest that the way you have to do it is you have to interrupt, you have to stand up, you have to bring the issue forward. And I guess Orley did this, right?
Right. And they've been kind of doing it all along. I've told them that they just can't sit there like sitting ducks. Because we're getting to the end now. We're getting to the end of the six-month period. And I don't know whether they're going to be entering mediation. I don't know if they don't get what they want in mediation, then I think they're going to go to trial. So it's really important for us to get all the missing pieces to the court case.
Boy, Stacy and Arlie are working people?
Yes.
What kind of work do they do?
He's working as a handyman and a carpenter, and Stacy, until quite recently, she was really intensely house and apartment hunting. And then we talked to David Beauvais, who said, look.
David Beauvais is an attorney in Berkeley who's won cases against CPS.
Yes, and he's an attorney that you referred me to, and I hope I haven't driven him crazy with questions, but he said they're not citizens of California. They have no intention of staying. They cannot force them to rent a house and to become permanent residents. And so just very recently, we all decided that they were going to abandon that. And so Stacy has been doing a little bit of work through Labor Ready. But this is the problem. The collections has already started trying to garnish wages because they're supposed to pay for this great foster care, right? So I really want to call collections and ask, you know, do you get a discount if your kids have been violated in foster care, or do you pay extra for it? You know, exactly what is the terms of this contract that the parents don't enter into willingly?
Well, isn't there also a cover-up fee that you have to pay for CPS so that it can, you know, for any administrative costs and covering all this up?
Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? You know, it's probably somewhere in the clause. But the thing is that it's really sad because while they were trying to get a house and felt they had a line on a house and stuff, they start realizing that a bunch of Orley's money is going to be garnished. So they're back to square one. I mean, the way the county has it set up, there'd be no way they could get ahead and get a house anyway if they were willing to do that. Because they would start taking money out, you know, for the four children's foster care.
Yet they've been requiring them to look for a house and urging them and pressing them and so forth?
Well, you know, they've indicated that the kids need a home to come home to. But we've had a meeting and we've decided, based on David Beauvais' advice, that they need to state clearly in mediation in the trial that they have no intention of staying here. And if there's to be follow-up, then it has to be done at their new address.
Mm-hmm. When is the next court date on this, and first of all, when is the next court date?
Orly, when is the next court date on this? Is it there's a hearing to try and mitigate and stop the medical marijuana, and then on the 27th there's mediation, and then I guess if nothing's decided in mediation, you know, then they're going to go to trial.
Why didn't they go to trial 4 months ago? I mean, it seemed to me, sometimes what I do when the police arrest me for something stupid.
I'm
like,
with you there, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you want them to have to respond immediately or cut bait, but again, you may be in a situation where you're trying to get documentation, right?
Well, no. What happened, you know, they took the advice of their public pretenders, and, you know, they had no idea the mess that they were going to be in, all of the trumped-up stuff. They just didn't know. And, you know, they were told at that point, you know, you should play ball with CPS, you should lay down all your rights, you should never talk back. So, you know, and then when I came on the case is when we started really kicking butt. But, of course, whether that gets them a win or not, we don't know.
So the hearing to mitigate and stop medical marijuana. What is that about, and when is that?
Well, the 20th, I think. But, you know, they. It's very interesting. Orley went to their own clinic and told them, showed them his medical marijuana prescription, because CPS was accusing him of polypharmacy. They didn't like the pain pills that his own doctor had given him.
Polypharmacy?
Meaning you use many different drugs.
Uh-huh.
You're like an addict. They didn't like the pain pills, even though he never fills the prescription. They're there for emergency. And they didn't like the medical marijuana. So he went over to the Emmeline Clinic without even telling them and showed them the medical marijuana prescription, showed them his medical condition, and they gave him the same medication. And interestingly enough, the doctor that helped him is the doctor that has been fired, that has AIDS, that has his own medical marijuana issue now.
Well,
you know,
what's his name? Do you remember?
Dr. Young.
I remember he was in the paper. He was a cause celebre for a while.
Yeah.
We're hoping to have him on the air. So.
Well, I think that he's going to be filing his own lawsuit, I'm sure, if he's smart.
Around what issue?
Well, I think around his firing, about the reason he was given and the reason he feels that it was really...
Oh,
he is still there?
Still there.
Oh, well, maybe that's why you haven't heard from Morley. Maybe he threatened and they just, Robert, and they kept him.
So in other words, the same kind, the criticism of Orley was that he had these multiple prescriptions, one of which he hadn't used, but when he went into with his medical marijuana into the local,
this is the county clinic.
The county clinic, he got the same prescription again, another of the sort that they criticized him for having.
Right. So they don't even know that he... And then he also went to an independent eye doctor on his Medi-Cal. And he also agreed with what Orley was doing. So, you know, now the eye doctor, he's a little bit more cagey, you know. I don't think he's going to come right out and say, but he's not going to say anything negative against it. You know, he is saying that he saw Orley and he wrote him the same thing with, did he write the medical marijuana on the back?
He wrote the code for medical marijuana.
He wrote the code on his prescription.
So CPS, is it the CPS claiming or is the judge claiming?
CPS, it just kills me. You know, not only are they psychologists and every damn thing under the sun, they're doctors now too, those social workers.
This, of course, is a big issue for a lot of people in terms of medical marijuana. Todd Macaria up in Berkeley is facing a bogus state witch hunt because of his willingness to provide medical marijuana to people with medical conditions. And here's, again, this seems to be to some extent at the root of this case. Orley's found himself in CPS's clutches in the first place, his children taken away because of a hostile neighbor, because he wouldn't share his medical marijuana with this hostile neighbor. Isn't that right?
That's true. And then, you know, to bring it up as an issue in the case is ridiculous. You know, I mean, when it's legal here, where else is it more legal than Santa Cruz? And you have your own county agency trying to persecute you for it. Another thing that's happened is Stacy and Orley are both somewhat learning disabled, and they had a lot of problems when they were young and in school. While their three-year-old was in foster care, they sent her for testing with a local psychologist, did not send her up to the fetal alcohol syndrome definitive place in Santa Clara. We have one of the best testing units, diagnostic units, that there is. And, you know, they just did it with a local psychologist. They did the evaluation in a vacuum, asked for no family records, family health records, nothing. This local yokel just decided that the child has fetal alcohol syndrome and ADD, and that the mother must have taken drugs while she was pregnant. I mean, they came up with this whole scenario when, in fact, all the children in their family and their own experience was exactly the same when they were young. They had a lot of learning problems in school. So
before we leave the medical marijuana thing, what time is this hearing, and is it open to the public, and do Stacy and Orley want the public to attend?
Well, the public can't attend. You know that.
Well,
so.
I would.
I mean, Orly would sure would like people to show up, particularly on this medication issue, but...
Well, you can show up, but if they exclude you from the courtroom, you can still sit outside with a sign.
Right,
you know.
Right.
So
we can get back to you with exactly what court that'll be in.
Okay.
It's 8:15 or 8:30 on the 20th, and, you know, the night before, they always change where it's going to be, hoping that you won't get the message.
Well, that's a learning test to see how disabled you are.
So,
can
you hang on a minute, Robert?
Sure. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We're talking with Roxana Quispe-Pache, who's an advocate for against abuses in the CPS, Child Protective Services system, and she, of course, is advocating for Stacy and Orly Jones, whose four children were taken away in April and are still in the hands of CPS. Go ahead, Roxana.
Well, people ask me all the time, well, who are you to decide? There's tons of stuff you probably don't know or whatever. But what they don't understand is my stand on this is that you have a legal proceeding, that you do not deny due process to anyone. And it's so interesting to me that parents are, like, just jerked around like this, denied due process, denied witnesses, are unable to talk about it, put on gag order. And there's nothing that they can do.
But, of course, they are. What they are doing is, I guess, they're kind of... last time we talked, you were talking about getting... You were getting the file together for these folks. You were trying to get access to the hitherto for secret files.
Well, we don't have any of the secret files. Stacy and Orly just got their first court papers, if you can believe this, and it's only their oldest son's file. There's four files, and they can't expect them to be copied. You know, it should take up to 2 more weeks. So, you know, they are going into this blind. They're probably going to have to fire their lawyers or do a continuance because they're going into everything blind. They do not know everything that has been said or done.
Roxana, are there any local groups of people victimized by CPS who've gotten together as support groups or advocacy groups?
Well, you know, I don't know of any, but when Orly gets through, I think he's turning into an activist, and we need to find people. I've sworn out a complaint with the grand jury, and, you know, I'm looking for the people that I've already represented to sign on to that complaint. They seem hesitant to do it. It's like once their case is over, they just want to forget about it, you know? And so it makes it really hard for people that are going through it. People just want to disappear. I've had people actually move out of the county that were homeowners after CPS got through with them. You know, they just sell their house and go. They don't even want to stay in this county. They've been terrorized so much.
Right. Wow. So...
Dollar.
What's the immediate outcome likely to be? Are these four children they're in foster care? Are their deadlines coming up? Or are they just going to sort of languish away in these questionable foster care situations, or at least some of them?
I really don't know. Can you hang on a minute, Robert?
Yeah.
Fill in with some chatter.
It's 100.
Yeah, you are indeed 100. Listening to Bathroom Spears Broadsides. We'll be going for another half hour. I'm sorry, hour and a half. And for those who want to call in, you can't call in right now because the line is occupied. We only have one line into the studio. But when you can call in, it is 427-3772, and you should give us a call. You back yet, Roxana? Looks like she's still
Hi, sorry.
That's
trying
okay.
to sell my vacuum cleaner. Got a great $300 vacuum cleaner here for $100, folks.
Go. So is there anything more you want to say on the subject, Roxana?
Well, you know, I'm out of words right now, but it's not because there's nothing to say. Orly, is there anything that you want me to say or that you want to say that I didn't cover? Any dirty tricks or... So, you know, at this time, they actually want to drug the baby and put her on Ritalin based on this yokel's, you know, diagnosis. Luckily, CPS seems to not be going for that. But, you know, it's one of those things that the diagnosis says, you know, it would be good for her to be on Ritalin.
Has the physical abuse of the children stopped, as far as you know, in the foster home?
Well, they're in a new foster home, the boys, and they definitely, I know the foster home, they will definitely not be abused there. They'll likely just be overfed, which they needed. You know, the older boy went down, in 2 months, went down 2 pant sizes because they were not allowed to have snacks. They could only eat at regimented times at this single foster parent's home. So he lost tons of weight, and he's just now starting to put weight back on.
Huh. Wow. Well, Roxanne, thanks for the update. So the next court date that we should know about, I guess, is this medical marijuana date for it's going to be at 8:15 on October 20th. You're going to maybe give me a call, let me know what time, and I will
Which courtroom. And, you know, it's sad because even if we send people there, like, what day is court? Tuesday? You know, I'm not sure what date that is. Do you have a calendar in front of you, Robert?
Yeah.
What day is the 20th?
20th is a Monday.
Okay, so on Sunday, you would probably announce that it's in this or that courtroom. They can get a call Sunday night, like after 10 o'clock p.m. in their voicemail. Before they go to court in the morning, they pick up their messages, and they can find out it's in a whole different room, a whole different building.
Or they might just go to that courtroom and sit for an hour and find
exactly.
out that it was in a different courtroom entirely, as it happened before.
Exactly.
Well, so. Interesting. Roxanne Kistapache, thanks for being on the air with us, and my regards to Stacy and Orly. Anything they want to say before I sign off here?
Well, why don't you let Orly give his phone number out if anybody's you know, wanting to help him or that kind of thing.
Yeah, my phone number is 325-4335. And if anybody has any help or information that might help me, I'd sure appreciate it. I'm also looking for work all the time, if anybody has anything like that. Thanks a lot.
325-4335?
Correctamundo.
Hey, thank you all.
And you remember about the shout-outs?
Tell me.
The Spanish shout-outs that are coming in on your program?
Oh, yes.
And have we gotten a little bit of Spanish together to deal with it or not?
No puedo, señor.
Okay, so the operative word is cállate, and we hang up, okay?
Cállate.
And you won't be being rude. They're the ones that are being rude to you.
Hey, thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And you're on free radio.
Hi, Robert. This is the voice crying in the wilderness. The most important remark, I think, that was made in the talk with Roxanne is that that they're going into this thing blind, and that they haven't the slightest. They have no papers, and they're going in blind. Now, anyone with any competence, I'm not an attorney, and but certainly an attorney knows that there's something called interrogatories, and where they can ask all of the questions, anything that they want to bring up as a point, and can turn into a question, which is practically everything, can be made out as a set of legal interrogatories, and all you have to do is ask them. You know, I mean, the work needs to be done. Now, I'm perfectly willing to do that work if Stacy and Orly will get in touch with me at 454-9392. But I offered this before. I offered to write a paper in the absence of any attorney that can do such a thing. It's pretty easy. All you do is ask them questions, and they have to answer. Otherwise, you certainly have papers in hand to go to court with.
Uh-huh. Well, that's certainly an option they have, and they have your number then.
I hope so. 454-9392.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Yeah, anybody who's got any thoughts on this issue, feel free to call in. And we're going to then be returning to some of our topics we began earlier in the show, the De Anza cave-in by the City Council, and the upcoming City Council damage control meeting, and of course, most important, the referendum that's being circulated to give the entire community a chance to vote on this issue.
Nobody wants it. a homeless like a scout of trash. Never knowing what to do when we pass. When we pass. Do I stare? Do I look away? I don't know, I ain't got very much to say to you. I'll give a nickel, I'll give a dime. I'll say I'm sorry, I haven't got the time for you. All the bricks in the window are all turning gray. The wind is blowing, I can't look away. All the stench of the homeless and the rotting streets are cast upon me like the shoes on my feet. Shoes on my feet. He's got his stocks and his mutual funds, and he'll tell you that his life is so much fun. So much fun. He's got an ulcer and an addicted wife, little Johnny's doing 25 years of life. Years of life. He's got a Lexus and a lot of cash, but the Christians say that stuff just won't last. It just won't last. So why do so many covet that stuff? I guess that Jesus just can't earn above. Of the bricks in the window are all turning gray. The wind is blowing, I can't look away. All the stench of the homeless and the rotting streets are cast upon me like the shoes on my feet. Shoes on my feet. Job, you lazy bum, can't you tell that life is so much fun? So much fun. Get a Lexus and get some cash. All your friends will think you made the big time at last. Big time at last. Now don't you worry, don't you fret, 'cause you ain't seen nothing yet. Save your nickels and save your time. Your God dollar bill will always come on time for you. All the bricks in the window are all turning gray. The wind is blowing, I can't look away. All the stench of the homeless and the rotting streets are cast upon me like a shoes on my feet. We treat the homeless like they're scattered trash.
To Susan Zeman in the aftermath of the, what do we call this rally?
Well, our title was God Security, and the point is that most of us don't.
we started with a rally at the county building, followed by a march through town, and ending up here on the green at the beautiful Loudoun Park.
Mm-hmm, that's correct. At the county building, we had a lot of people who live in Santa Cruz come and talk about how the WTO and NAFTA have negatively impacted their lives, how these policies that seem so distant to most of us as we go about our lives, and we don't necessarily think about all of these connections and how it is that those global policies are affecting our lives right here in Santa Cruz.
And you had to pay what kind of money to the county to get a permit? I guess the county waived your fee for a permit.
The county did waive our fee. We did have to provide insurance to cover the location of the county building, which was $150. So.
How many people were you insuring against incidental mishap?
I think we had probably about 100 people. Not too many.
So anybody stubbed toes? Any complaints against your group?
We didn't have a single health or medical problem.
Have you ever, in any of your protests, had any injuries which the county was sued for? This insurance claim deal?
No, we have not. And even if we did, we are members of the public at public facilities. So
seems a little strange.
I have a problem with this insurance thing. Yeah, why it is that we have to, you know, get each of these individuals here who donates pennies and dollars out of their pocket to pay for this insurance so that the public can gather at a public location.
And the next march of this was a march over here. Did you block traffic?
We did. We stayed on the sidewalk coming down Water Street, but when we got onto Pacific, the sidewalk...
Couldn't control yourself, could you?
Well, you know, the sidewalks there are just too crowded, and there's a lot of the sidewalks that are blocked off with fences and chairs for cafes along the way. And, of course, we have a vibrant, healthy downtown here in Santa Cruz, so there are tons of pedestrians all over the sidewalks downtown. So we were forced to march on the street.
Well, I hope you didn't distress the Pacific Trading Company by engaging any street performing nearby.
We had a wonderful drumming corps called the Goddesses of Funk who were drumming just loudly and just wonderfully with us.
We didn't sit down anywhere near the Pacific Trading Company, and we have removed the seating in order to ensure the employees that they will not be stared at or harassed.
We did not. We continued straight down Pacific Avenue. We didn't want to scare anybody.
Well, you see, there you are. Now, did you pick up any devotees along the way, any Hare Krishna people, fundamentalists, wandering, misled Rutkin supporters?
I hope so.
And then you came here about 2 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's correct.
And you had a host of speakers and about 100 people here? Or?
Probably about 100 people here. When we got here, we had quite a few musicians and a lot of people who do global work in their lives. So we had some business people who work with fair trade networks and just talking a little bit about how they are able to do that. Interestingly enough, we had one business person, Jack Sparks, who owns Shangri-La downtown, which is an entirely fair trade-based business. And he was unable to be here today, and he's actually closing up shop. He's not able to survive. And in our country, unfortunately, we are constantly bombarded with these messages about how we're going to save a penny here and a dime there to get this really cheap crap made in China somewhere. And we're really brainwashed into thinking that that's what we need to do. And people are brainwashed into thinking that it's somehow immoral for them to pay good money for a good product that's paying living wages somewhere. So that's very unfortunate. But we had a wonderful program here today with quite a lot going on.
The whole issue that you're really focusing on is that jobs are being sent overseas, environmental protections are being dumped, labor rights are being destroyed all through these international organizations and new agreements that are kind of subverting treaties, subverting the kind of the gains that our country and other countries have struggled for. I should say the people of our countries have struggled for so many years.
Well, that's exactly the point. And it's, you know, so it's very complicated, right? We put all these jobs overseas, and some of us think, well, that's great for the people who live overseas. Now they have jobs. But one thing that it does right here in Santa Cruz is it increases our unemployment rate, which drives down wages and benefits for all of us, including you and me. And then when we look overseas at what we've got over there, we hear companies saying, well, you know, they need jobs and we pay them good wages, but they're not paying them enough wages to get by. And then when we look at the environmental laws over in those places, we're exposing the people who live there to horrible environmental degradation. I was talking to one of the merchants in fair trade just the other day, and he was telling me about a family that he met in, I believe it was Thailand, and talking to the people who were going to sell him statues to sell in his fair trade shop. And right there in the kitchen of the family home, the man is mashing mercury to mix with gold to plate on these statues so that someone can buy it at some, you know, really cheap price at some cute little boutique here in Santa Cruz. And in the meantime, he is inhaling mercury. His infant daughter is inhaling mercury. His wife is inhaling mercury. Everybody who comes through his home is inhaling the mercury that he's using so that he can create this statue cheaply so that some some person can put it on their mantle.
Bourgeois booby.
And, you know, feel like somehow they're global. And so we just...
sold in some knick-knack shop in Santa Cruz, downtown.
Absolutely. So what we need is more of these fair trade networks where we pay a reasonable dollar for a reasonable product. And a reasonable product means that people are not dying in its production, because no statue is worth some infant daughter's death because she inhaled mercury.
Now you're also, of course, at the same time, we're confronted with the spectacle of a farmer who killed himself a half a world away. Actually, it wasn't half a world. I think it was in Mexico, right? The Cancun Conference.
Not far away from us.
And what, any updates from that situation, or any links with what's going on down there, and what we in Santa Cruz should expect out of that, or can do? There's a conference there. What's that about?
Excuse me. Well, yeah, there's definitely a lot of links. I mean, first of all, the reason that we gathered here today is to coincide with that event down in Cancun, Mexico. There are about 7 Santa Cruz people that are in Cancun right now, sort of representing the rest of us. We were hoping to have some, to be able to read some dispatches from them at the event today, and they're probably having trouble getting to computers, or for whatever reason, we are not receiving those as expected on email. So we don't know exactly what's happening down in Cancun other than what we read in the mainstream press, which, of course, is not much.
Well, what I heard on yesterday's Democracy Now!, the Pacifica news report from Cancun, they have a reporter down there, I guess Amy Goodman does, was the there are thousands of people who pushed back the barricades, particularly the one where this guy was killed himself, and they kind of leapt over the barricade and pushed back the police. But what decisions are being made by the policymakers down there that we should be concerned about, if any?
Wow, they're making so many decisions down there that affect us. It's almost hard to go into it in a very... the Mexican government revoked one of the articles of their constitution, which provided for communal farmland. And so because of that, farmers throughout Mexico have lost their farmland, you know, that they've been born on and grown up on and farmed all of their lives. And then because of WTO and NAFTA policies, we have made it legally possible for United States companies that raise corn cheaply and with heavy federal subsidies. We have allowed them to dump their corn into Mexican markets, which is then bought in Mexico at a much cheaper rate than what Mexicans pay to buy their own corn that is raised right down the street. And that has to do with genetically modified organisms that are used here in the United States to raise corn as cheaply as possible. It has to do with the government subsidies. And I wish that I could tell you the number, but I can't think of it off the top of my head about how many millions of dollars the United States provides to corn farmers every year. And of course, the end result is that Mexicans are losing their livelihood, and so they come across the border to the only jobs that are left, which is up here in our farmlands, where they work for ungodly wages 7 days a week and no health benefits, and often accompanied by sexual abuse and everything else bad that could possibly happen to a person.
So you march through the streets of Santa Cruz with some large signs, imagine peace, honor the Constitution. I guess you had booths from different groups of people. You had, gosh, the Bill of Rights Defense Committee. You have a group, No Enemy. It must have had at least a couple of dozen groups here today.
We had quite a few groups here today, setting up tables and talking to people. It was definitely a successful event.
I guess it's a question I always ask, because it seems kind of a key issue here is... Okay, so we've been talking with Susan Zeman, and hopefully we'll get some more information later. Thanks, Susan. She's off to a bourgeois play. We'll talk about that later. Okay, it's about 9:55 in front of the closed Pacific Trading Company on Saturday night. We're talking to the peripatetic Kuo. All you have in front of you is a book and a backpack. I don't see the usual sign and anything else. What's going on here?
Well, lately they've been telling me not to panhandle here in front of the Pacific Trading Company, so when I do, I go over to Shogun or the Sock Shop Shoe Company, and they kicked me away earlier because they said they had a complaint, so I went to the Del Mar. And
never sent me anything.
Oh, who complained about you here in front of the Pacific Trading Company?
Hell if I know. I asked them. Oh, not Pacific Trading Company, in front of Shogun.
You said you were told to move from here as well?
No, not to move from here. Not to move from here, but it was like, it was too hot earlier, so I didn't move. And
too
I went.
Hot meaning like the weather was too hot?
Well, that and there was a lot of like, nice girls, but no, it's like, in front of Shogun, they told me to move, so
who told you, the owners of Shogun, or police?
The downtown people.
The hosts? And what ordinance did they say you were violating, or did they just tell you to move?
They didn't, they just said they had a complaint, so they asked me to move, and I did. I went across the street to the Del Mar, and eventually I had someone watching my stuff so I can go to my locker Greyhound and pay for it, and when I came back, they said they'd had been told to move my stuff from there, so I'm back here.
When you came back, what did they do with your stuff?
They told me to move it, as opposed to calling on an officer to claim my stuff.
I see. So, this is all happening today?
Yes.
And have you gotten any further citations?
No.
Okay, well, keep your nose clean, okay?
That's what a judge told me once. I've been trying to ever since.
Yeah, it looks pretty clean, actually.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And Kuo actually went to court and successfully fought a citation or two with the help of a public pretender, even one who was not required to help him, who went out of his way to help. I'm going to have his name and give him put him on the special, very small roll of honor of public defenders who actually, in some cases, are defending the public in a meaningful way. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrobs Pierre's Broadside, Civil Rights for the Poor on Sundays, and we return on Thursdays, 6 to 8. You want to be a part of an effort to restore civil rights to the homeless and to the community generally, because it doesn't just affect one group of people. It affects everybody when one group's civil rights or civil liberties are taken away. You can get in touch with HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. We meet Wednesdays at Baker Square, 1107 Ocean Street, at 8:30 in the morning. And it's free coffee if you can't afford it. And we chatter. Looks like we got a little chatter coming in on the phone here. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert, it's Roxanne again.
Hey, Roxanne.
Your other taping reminded me of something that I got on the Internet. I really get tired of jokes on the Internet. But I got some pretty good ones but with political comments.
Uh-huh.
And Jay Leno made a comment because President Bush had been saying that now was the time to drop a new constitution for Iraq. And Jay Leno thought that was a lot of trouble to go to. Why don't we just give them ours? Because we're not really using it anymore. And I thought, that is so true.
Well,
exactly true. We are not using our constitution any longer. So that's all. I just had to throw that in.
Well, thank you.
Bye-bye.
That's not funny, though, Roxanne. That's not funny at all.
Well, it's actually not. It's very distressing.
Yes,
I mean,
is.
But I'm glad that other people see it, too, that we're just so far outside the Constitution.
True.
In every city, every town, locally, federally, statewide.
We'll see if the De Anza people can use the Constitution to get a referendum on the latest backroom vote by the city council.
I don't know.
Right.
I just, you know, they're fighting so politely.
So politely.
So.
Hey, thank you. 427-3772 is the number to call in. Some of us aren't so polite. Last caller, for example, has been known to raise her voice, as have I. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with being polite, and, you know, initially. Certainly, why not? It's only when you find that your Constitution doesn't seem to be being followed by those who are in positions of power and are taking advantage of their power that you need to mobilize counterpower, and that's what a referendum is about, that's what organizing is about, that's what standing up for your rights is about, calling people over when you see police misconduct on the streets, that's what that's about. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, hi, this is Becky calling in.
Hey, Becky.
Yeah, I just wanted to draw your attention to an article about Dignity Village that's in today's Sentinel,
mm-hmm.
Sunday, October 5th, 2003, on page A23. An article, it's a New York Times article, and the title is Community of Homeless Faces Uncertain Future. I guess the lease is coming up on the piece of property that Dignity Village is currently housed on, about an acre of paved lot that had been used for a leaf processing facility by the city of Portland, and they had a two-year stint on that, and it's coming up now. And so
there's some forces that don't want to renew it.
Yeah, it's actually an article by Sarah Kershaw, reprinted from the New York Times, perhaps a longer article. Maybe I should check the...
This is Sarah Kershaw's article.
Sunday paper, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Community of Homeless Faces Uncertain Future, for those who are interested, as you say, Becky, on page A23 of the far-too-expensive Sunday Sentinel, which you might be able to get online. I don't know if it's... you can often get many of the Sentinel articles online. And by the way, for those of you who want to follow the De Anza struggle, just look up De Anza mobile home rent control city council vote, and you'll find a whole bunch of articles recently in the Mercury News. Heather Berner has an article about this issue in today's Sentinel where she kind of sympathizes with the city. Berner has been doing some exposing of the situation, a little pro-tenant, but now I think she's swinging back the other way. But regarding Dignity Village, I noticed this, Becky. Have you looked it over and thought about it? I haven't read this article closely. I just gave it a very quick glance.
Yeah, I read it, and I invite people to read it because it does talk about the nuts and bolts of how this camp has been working, how they have it set up, how it's such an improvement over what these homeless persons' lives were like before they became members of Dignity Village, and you know what some of the goals are. It's a little too rigid for my taste, but that's just me personally.
Well, we had people from Dignity Village coming to the Right to Sleep Summit, which Thomas and Ganilla Levitt hosted last year at their house, Camp Paradise, Dignity Village, Tent City 3 from Seattle, Isla Vista, which is now gone. And there was kind of a meeting of the tribes, so to speak. These are homeless people that have gotten together for self-protection and self-enrichment in communities. And I guess you have them informally in Santa Cruz still, kind of hiding in the bushes.
Well, of course, we look at Dignity Village as a model for something that we desperately need here in Santa Cruz, and that is a homeless campground. We don't have sufficient facilities. I think, there's 39 spaces in the ISSP program tonight. And homelessness has been increasing, not decreasing. So with the economy being what it is. So in order for the community to really just sort of take care of the people that are really in the most dire straits, we should be setting up a homeless campground and a homeless car park. And we've really been negligent in not doing that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know some groups have been coming together to do that. Huff, of course, had a special meeting yesterday in the park to try to expand its outreach. We normally meet in the mornings on weekdays, Wednesdays, when people sometimes find it hard to come. And so we tried a Saturday meeting, which wasn't terribly successful. There's another group called the Human Rights Coalition, which is particularly focused on the sleeping ban and the downtown ordinances, which criminalize homeless people and make the very act of sleeping itself, as I said at the beginning of the show, illegal. What's your reading on the current situation for people sleeping and camping in Santa Cruz as compared to a year ago or 5 years ago? Might be better than 5 years ago, but what about better than a year ago? Any sense of historically what's going on, Becky?
Well, I think that there was more focus on it when Camp Paradise was a hot item in the news, and people, the general public, became much more aware of the needs of the homeless and how homeless people are really struggling to get employments or to get school or to get back into housing. They're just the opposite of lazy bums on the dole. That may be more like, the inheritors of great fortunes might be lazy bums on the dole more accurately than your average homeless person. And so I think that the homeless have been in Santa Cruz have been more dissipated, more isolated from each other, and that the police harassment is gradually increasing.
Mm. Of course, at City Council, how do you rate the prospects? I guess there's a family center that is being built, and I'm not sure where it's at as far as funding goes. I'm going to actually mm-hmm. be talking with Karen Brock at the Homeless Service Center tomorrow at 8 o'clock. She's a very sympathetic and, I think, active person who's been trying to defend the Homeless Against the Sleeping ban by providing a documentation that there is no legal place for 95-98% of them to go at night, that the shelters, shelter, the 39-space program you mentioned, is full. And this becomes the basis for a lot of dismissals of tickets, she says.
Well, this family shelter is a couple years away before they actually get to fill in the final funding gaps and build it. So it's not something that's going to be on the horizon right away, although I do think that they are continuing to accrue funds into a fund for that shelter.
Now, the De Anza situation, perhaps Mike Rotkin might say to you, is now going to mean, if they pass this referendum, less money for homeless services, because they'll be forcing the city to wield the axe and to cut into the muscle and the bone in order to protect the selfish interests of a bunch of elderly people who already have housing.
Well,
you?
Mike may be perfectly willing to, out of spite, go and cut back on the ISSP program or somewhere like that, which, you know, he does have the authority at City Council to do, but that wouldn't be the wisest thing to do. Look, the city spent $17 million building 48 units of affordable housing in Beach Flats, and yet they're going to give up on 198 units of currently affordable housing in the De Anza, plus 67 units in Clearview Court. What is that, 265 units of currently affordable housing, and they're going to give that up because, oh, we're going to run up $100,000 a month legal fees, which I think are greatly exaggerated. And Mike Rotkin admitted on the Voices show that it's just an estimate and it really could be something entirely different.
Well, he did say that they spent $72,000 last month.
Well, Dick Wilson said that they spent $750,000 so far.
Becky, you're distorting,
in 4 years.
Becky, you're distorting out a bit. Maybe if you could talk a little bit further away from the phone.
Sure.
Thanks. Go ahead.
Yeah, that Dick Wilson says that they've currently spent $750,000 in 4 years. Why it would suddenly jump to $100,000 a month has not been explained, but there are other things that the city could do or other ways to defray these costs. But, you know, look down the road here. Yes, they're going to have the 34-year leases for the current residents so that we won't see, you know, these people literally being dumped on the street and adding to the homeless population. But there's no way that we're going to be able to replace these 265 units of affordable housing in anywhere in the near future at all. So we have to fight for them. If the city is willing to spend $17 million on 48 units, how much should they be willing to spend to keep 265 units? That's the math, Mike.
Well, what
if
about,
he's listening.
Well, I mean, the problem, as was described by Herb Rossman earlier of De Anza, is that it isn't even a question of having time to ponder the whole thing with the residents and the community. According to his rather sympathetic to the city council perspective on it, though he is a resident, he's fighting it with a referendum. But it was that the MHC Corporation just said, here's a settlement, take it or leave it, and take it with this deadline. It passes by the 23rd and rent control leaves by October 23rd, or else we don't settle, we go to court, and it's going to cost you $3 million if you lose, and I don't know, $1.5 million even to fight it to begin with, which you can't afford. Mm-hmm. I guess what you're saying is,
and also Kovacevic's dire claim it could cost $16 million up the road if they lose, because that is the amount that MHC is asking for in damages, is $16 million. However, we all know that MHC hasn't had any damages, certainly not any financial damages. They bought the park for $8.4 million in 1994, and in 2003, it's worth it $30 million as is with rent control in place.
You're denying them extra money, Becky Johnson. Money is money is money. Let's think of it that way.
Well, this would also be denying the seniors who invested their life savings into their coaches. right to
what alternative
reap their on their investment.
What alternatives do you have for this for the city council? Where would they find this? What is it? $1 to $3 million that is estimated that this lawsuit is going to cost. Where exactly in the budget? Where will it be found?
Okay, first I would immediately take up the special assessment district offer, which you have to pass by 2/3 of the voters. This would not be a tax on the entire city. It would be a tax on just certain districts that are affected. It could be limited to De Anza and Clearview Court, the special assessment district. That would raise a certain amount of fund
$25,000
every month. Okay, but those people could continue to pay that assessment long after the litigation is over, and the city could recoup in time the entire amount.
So you're suggesting that $25,000 a month.
Also,
wait a minute. $25,000 a month of $100,000 legal fees would leave them $75,000 in debt each month. That would require 3 additional months beyond that to pay for every month spent. So you're saying it could be done over a period of maybe 5 or 6 years.
Right. Also, Rodkin, you know, Chris Crone asked Mike Rodkin, well, what about, you know, our reserve fund, of which Chris thought there was $5 or $6 million. Mike Rodkin says there's 4.4, but he said, oh, but that's our, what if, you know, our rainy day fund. What if something happens in the future? What if something happens? This is something happening right now, and especially if we can work ways where the city could get paid back over time, that's fiscally wise. Cutting the ISSP program that would result in deaths right away, or even what they're doing, which could result in the tenants suing the city and having a very likely chance of winning, given the contracts that they all signed, that's fiscally foolish too.
Well, it seems to me that the real crime here, or problem, or defect, what you will, is that the city council declined to really discuss the real issues. I mean, maybe it is the best thing to go with this settlement. Maybe it is the best thing to proceed to save the entire city money and, you know, destroy the equity for a smaller group of people. I don't think it is. I've signed the referendum. I'm against it. But let's assume that, you know, there are arguments in favor of that by well-intentioned people.
That's
and I don't know if I want to include the city council in that group. But the city council did not say, okay, let's have an open and true discussion about this. Even though
I want to answer your question.
Yeah.
Please stop. Questioning me.
Yeah.
The answer...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
The answer is that that's the trust us theory, that the council is saying, trust us. We've been sitting in sessions in private litigation sessions for 4 years. We're the experts. We know everything that's going on, and we're doing the best we can for you. Believe us. This is the best deal we can get. But they haven't shown us the evidence for that, and I don't know about you, Robert, but I really haven't developed a lot of trust with the Santa Cruz City Council over the years, and it doesn't work for me.
Well, actually, you're bringing up this issue yourself on your own Club Cruise program at 7 o'clock Tuesday and Thursday this week, right?
That's right, on Channel 27.
The speediest get-together of a tape I've heard in some time.
And thanks to some of the people down at Playback at Community TV for taking this kind of a hurry-up order. Which is, you know, airing it far quicker than I can usually get something on the air. But, yeah, I interview Sterling Frost, the president of the De Anza Mobile Homes Homeowners Association, and on that show. And I invite people to tune in for that. It's on Tuesday night at 7, Channel 27, and then it's rebroadcast on Thursday, also at 7 p.m. That will be at the exact same time that the city council is holding this special session about the De Anza rent control gutting. And I think their big concern is they're concerned that these De Anza residents are going to get the signatures necessary to put this referendum on the ballot.
Right. I think it's I think it's a little slimy to say that, that putting it on the ballot, it, even allowing people to vote on it, is going to result in the city councils having to start slashing and burning. Although I guess the argument for that is that the settlement will not go through because the October 23rd deadline for ending rent control that MHC has put out is going to be passed, and the entire thing will go back to court. So they're going to claim now we have to cut social services in order to proceed with the legal expenses. What's your response to that, Becky?
Well, I think that they should go to that contingency fund first before they touch any more social service. They've already cut, 10% across the board for social services, and they came back and cut, homeless services another 1% after that. They've already made their cuts there. They'll have to go somewhere else. But luckily,
Chief Belcher and his top lieutenants have retired with a hefty pension.
Yeah, I'm sure that the Chief Belcher's pension will not be cut. And I'm sure Dick Wilson, who's also looking at his own future pension, wants to make sure there's plenty of money in the fund so that he gets fully funded when he goes out.
We can get the equity in Dick's house. Anyway, thank you, Becky, for calling in.
No problem.
Bye-bye. 427-3772 is the call-in number, and we have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, this is a Santa Cruz resident.
Uh-huh. And, you're under arrest. I'm sorry, I think I recognize you. I'm not going to reveal your identity at this time.
That's okay, because I'm going to sound like a real meanie here. You know, those people at the trailer park are just greedy.
No, wait a minute. It's not a trailer park. They're not trailer trash. It's a mobile home park, okay?
Yeah. But they're the same people that put up no parking signs so the homeless couldn't sleep near there. Also, they've never stepped up to the plate for any kind of issues related to poor people in this community. You know, so now, I mean, the guy said it himself on your program. He said, we're doing this because we have to protect number one, and that's all they're thinking about. It's the same, you know, they have no class consciousness. I'm fighting to smash capitalism, but what they want is they want the profit in their real estate investments. So essentially what they want is they want Pebble Beach living at Volkswagen prices, and they want us to pay for it. So I don't think we should pay for it.
Well, a couple of comments. I'm, of course, it sounds like I'm on the other side of you on this issue. Although, you know, your arguments aren't to be dismissed lightly, there are people out there who have been fighting for civil rights for homeless people. The organization as a whole, no, I would say that. But I don't think the organization as a whole either. I have no evidence that they requested those signs be put up. I know that there was some agitation from some members, and I don't know specifically, you know, maybe they were put up at the behest of the whole organization. I haven't heard that. There is prejudice against poor and homeless people throughout the society, misguided, stupid, vicious prejudice, no question about it. But I don't know if it, well, I mean, to me it seems to some extent like a question not just of solidarity, but of calling the city council on its abusive practices at city council and getting a broader coalition to make the city council more responsive.
I wouldn't miss any opportunity to slander the city council or to drag them through the mud. I have no admiration for them at all.
Well, I'd say drag them into the light. The mud is already, they've been doing the mud fighting in the back rooms.
But on this issue, they're correct. You know, we can't afford $16 million. And like I said, you know, look, they have a little bit more money than the people on the bottom. So they think of themselves as, oh, we're not renters. We're homeowners. Well, let me tell them something. You can't be a homeowner in California unless you have $500,000. So you people aren't homeowners. You're poor people. But you want to think of yourself as upper middle class. And see, for the reason that they have no class consciousness, I'd like to see those people end up on the street. Of course, they're not going to end up on the street. Nobody's going to end up on the street because of this. They're going to get to live in their you know, trailers until, you know, for a significant period of time. So it's not an emergency housing issue. It's a house. It's an issue of, do they get to keep their profits on the real estate that they bought when the, you know, real estate prices have gone through the roof? Now, I don't think the rest of the city should subsidize them in their profit-making speculation.
Well, do you favor the rent control law that was passed to protect the rents?
I favor rent control. No, I do not. Because I favor rent control for everybody or nobody.
Well, what if you can only get it incrementally? Would you say you would wait until everybody gets it, or you would try to...
Yeah, I wouldn't favor just them. Now, if those people had... If they had stepped up to the plate before this, and I'm not saying all of them do or all of them don't, but I can tell you one thing. I've been to enough city council meetings and watched enough of the local so-called liberal community to know that they haven't stepped up to the plate on poor people's issues. You know, they're big on Mumia, they're big on Palestine, they're big on Iraq. But you know, you let some guy with a 3-day beard walk down their street, and they're ready to call the cops on him. So I'd like to see them get a little of their own medicine.
Well, it looks like they're going to get a lot of it if this passes. But this is also going to impact any kind of rent control throughout the state in terms of at least emboldening MHC. Do you want to see that happen?
Not necessarily. I have a particular dislike for the Santa Cruz liberal community. And I don't...
You got against the Santa Cruz liberals.
Because they're full of shit. That's what I've got against them. See, if somebody's from Pebble Beach or Carmel or whatever, and they admit that they're a Republican, they admit they don't want any bums in their neighborhood, and they use police state-sponsored violence to get rid of them, they're acting in a consistent manner. They're not bullshitting anybody. But these people in Santa Cruz who support Palestine, who support, you know, Iraqi orphans, who support Ukrainian orphans, you know, I'd like I'd like to see them march down to county jail and get a beating.
Well, no one accused you of ever being half-hearted in your sentiments, caller. maybe we can get a response from somebody out of De Anza who may be listening to this show as to their thoughts. You may be raising a few eyebrows out there.
Well, you know, I've had enough of this shit. You know, these people ought to stop calling themselves liberals. You know, there is no guarantee of economic security in the United States Constitution. So all those people ought to grow up and wake up and smell the coffee. You're living in a capitalist society. You've done nothing to change it for your 70 or 80 years around here, however old you are. And so this is what you get in return. That's all I have to say about it.
Hey, thank you, caller. And I see smoke coming out of the phone line. Let's see what comes up next.
Okay.
Bye-bye. So for anybody who wants to respond to that rather strong critique from the left of the De Anza, 427-3772 is the phone number to call in. I am left silent after that last outburst from that caller, so perhaps somebody else wishes to speak into the pregnant silence on this issue. We were going to get Paul Marcel and Sampson on this morning talking about the Metro Riders Association. For some reason, he has not called in. I will chastise him roundly and hopefully find out what's happening at the next show, 6 to 8 on Thursday. We have a call. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Robert?
Yes.
I agree with that caller 100%. He put it so good. Listen, any word on changing the frequency?
Well, as I see a note on the wall posted here which talks about 101.1 FM.
Oh, thank goodness.
But, I mean, again, we're still at 96.3. For a lot of people, that's a real inconvenience, I know, and I apologize for that. But, again, you get to listen to a little Christian rock music. Look at it that way.
Oh, yuck. 101.1?
101.1 FM.
Thank goodness. When are they going to do that?
I am not sure. I understand that it since it's here on the wall, I think it may be happening even now. You might try going to 101 and see if it's there yet.
Okay, because I'm on 7th Avenue, and I can hear you now and then, the Christian stuff comes in.
Aren't you one of those trailer trash people who wanders around with your trailer?
I'm a wannabe trailer trasher.
Oh, yeah? Tell me about that.
No, I don't know. It's a deep psychological sickness, I suppose. But, you know, that caller said, you know, he's just bringing it out in the light, the air of day, is, you know, all these 70 years, and they didn't, you know, who knows? I've never met those people, right? Mm-hmm. But they want to be helped. And meanwhile, other people, the homeless, are treated like crap, you know, and there's other injustices going on. And where were they, you know? So, I don't know.
I think maybe you do know.
Well, that, like I said, I agree with pretty much, you know, I didn't hear everything you said, but a few of those, there was real, yeah, I agreed.
Now, caller, do you live in a van yourself?
Yes.
And how have the police been treating you in the last few months?
Luckily, I have a couple of places people have helped me on private property, so they can't touch me, you know, yet.
Huh. Because I know you were getting hassled big time a year or two ago.
Oh, I'll tell you, yeah. Intimidated by sheriffs and treated like common, you know, like criminal trash. You know, it's terrible, you know, plus working for a living, you know, and paying those parasites. I see all state, county, federal work jobs. It's all parasitical in nature. They're sucking off the taxes, right? And then to be treated like a, you know, like I've done something wrong, you know. You know, people will find that it's like those people out there.
I think you're breaking up there, caller.
Yeah.
Listen, thank you for calling. Let's talk again. And 427-3772 is the call-in number. No shout-outs, please, but feel free to call in. Looks like we got a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Robert, we are broadcasting right now at 101.1.
Time to call the FCC. Do you have the FCC's number?
800-FCC, kiss my ass or something.
Very good, very good.
Something along those lines?
So we are broadcasting at 101.1.
Yes, it's not the best signal in the world, but I'm sure that guy will be able to pick it up.
Wow, that's great.
It's over in that area. We're still working on getting the antenna.
When did that start, and when are you going to take some vitamin C?
It's been going on not probably as long as I've been sick the last couple of weeks. And we have Uncle Dennis to thank for that.
Any other reports from
this
the...
This is just because you don't come to meetings and you don't know what's going on.
Well, I don't want to catch your cold there.
Excuse me.
Yes. Actually, I already have your cold, but I'm kind of keeping it at bay. Echinacea and such.
I just got sick. I'm all right. I'm getting better, though. But
there's some tapes in the studio for you. By the way, a caller, for listeners who don't know, this particular technician who's calling in is the man who puts a lot of tape on the internet. For those of us who aren't able to hear these shows, you can actually catch them archived. Do you have any instructions on how people can get to those archives?
Of your stuff?
Or Free Radio Santa Cruz programs generally. Or is that...
Excuse me. Well, first of all, that we have our own website, freakradio.org, where if people go to the digital archives area, you can find a lot of fun with Bush mixes that I've put together, as well as a program called Become the Media Radio, which has some of your stuff, like the political tabling incidents with Steve Argue and that other person. And there's a bunch of other free radio programming interviews. Old Lady Scarm's done about Palestine and the occupation of Palestine, as well as stuff about Iraq, V-Man interviewing different people about Iraq. I can't remember everybody. I'm kind of sick right now, but I'm working on another one right now. Hopefully those will be going up on our website. We have two of them up there if people want to download them for free, or they can go to www.radioforall. That's the number for all. .net, and they can download MP3s there. You can search for Free Radio Santa Cruz and find a bunch of stuff, or search your name, or search homelessness and probably find stuff that you've done. I can't remember all the stuff I've put up of yours.
But you put up a lot, and you put up with me as well, so.
We put up with you.
Indeed. Well, listen, I'm going to let you get out of here because it sounds
like I just wanted to mention that I'm glad you got that kind of call from that last caller, because I didn't really, I just heard a little bit about this Deonza thing, and it's good to hear different points of view from different people, even if they don't agree. So I know there's probably a lot of people pissed off and want to, get on the phone line, so I'm going to get off.
Hey, thank you. Better to be pissed off than get pissed on.
Okay, Robert.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And phone line is open, 427-3772. Your chance to give us your story, give us your thoughts, give us your analysis. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert.
Hi.
This is Tim, and just wanted to let people know, because some of the people in your audience will know Gail and David. They're a homeless couple living in their van.
Okay.
She's an old lady.
Yes, I do. I know Gail and David.
Yeah, in a lot of pain much of the time. Basically, kind of a Christian Scientist, doesn't really believe in doctors.
Uh-huh.
Trying to keep herself healthy as best as she can.
Right.
And she uses marijuana medicinally.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, she doesn't have a doctor's recommendation.
Uh-oh, arrest her.
Yeah, well, they basically did last night. At least gave him a ticket. He's basically a caregiver. They searched her van for about an hour, and she can't even stand up. She's like, they told her to get out of the van, and she couldn't do it. And so it's like they obviously
Santa Cruz police.
Hmm?
Santa Cruz police.
Exactly. Yep.
Do we know the names of the people involved?
Something with a B for one of them.
Not Baker.
No. It's
Bayani?
Maybe.
I don't know. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, that might be it. I think Dave got one of the names. I don't think he got both of them. It's obviously, you take one look at her and you can see her, she's not doing too well. And, I just wanted to put it out there for two reasons. One is, you've got the city council trying to make more homeless people from out at Deonza, but also making these, highfalutin proclamations at City Hall in support of medical marijuana, and which is all good, but at the same time, you've got the Santa Cruz police basically ignoring the intent of the medical marijuana initiatives and going around harassing old people living in their vans, trying to get some relief from their pain. I mean, it's likely she has multiple sclerosis, but it hasn't been diagnosed because she doesn't want to go to doctors. And frankly, I don't blame her. And, for these people to get, harassed, it's just, just cruel and unusual punishment.
Perhaps cruel and usual punishment.
Yeah, that's basically it. Mm-hmm. So, I just see, at the top that the politicians making all these statements, and the bottom, people are still getting screwed. So, I wanted to shout out, against this fascist politics that are still going down, but also let, a lot of the listeners would know who Gail and David are.
Is there any way they can help out Gail and David? Can they give you a call and leave a message with you, or? I could give the Huff line number if anybody's interested, 423-HUFF. If you want to help Gail in some way with anything, give me a call and I'll pass on the word to you, Tim.
Okay, and also, a lot of people listening would know who they are, and I'm, just saying, help them out if you see them, and even just, emotional support, that kind of thing, because, this is just ridiculous. It's like they shouldn't, an old lady living in a van, things are hard enough as it is, and this is, like, one of the wise old women of the tribe, this is how our culture treats these people. It's just a real shame. So, and those that know Gail and David, she's just like a I mean, she just shines, you know. Even though her body is frail, her spirit is there.
I remember, I saw her at the farmer's market. Got your message, Tim. Is there more you want to say about it?
No, that's basically it. Wanted to let people know about that and, you know, give them some help and encouragement and that kind of thing.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Bye.
And the 101 thing, I'm downtown. I can hear 96.3 real clear. I turned over to 101.1, and I couldn't get anything, so I don't know if that's just for out-of-town people or what. But
I think it could be for the east side, but I'm not sure. I'll try it when I get out on the east side.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Sure. Bye.
Free Radio Santa Cruz has got open lines. This is Bathroom Spears Broadside. 20 minutes left in the show. Call now if you want to get on the air. Here's an email from Ed Davidson. Well, let's take this call first. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello?
Yes, sorry, I had to turn my radio off.
No problem.
All right. Yeah, I live in an RV myself.
Okay.
Actually. And there is a lot of hassle with police all the time with anyone living in a vehicle.
Right.
But pretty much keeping it low-key, always parking in out-of-the-way places and always moving just kind of makes my home more mobile than it is, and never knowing where I am when I wake up. But mostly it's choosing where I want to wake up rather than where I want to go to sleep.
Mm-hmm. So I know that there in Santa Barbara, a group called Homes on Wheels has unsuccessfully tried to pressure for a while successfully, but recently not very successfully in fighting the gentrification crap that's going on there against RVs. But here in Santa Cruz, a similar group of vehicle owners, the Homeowners Vehicular Association, or some other such name, has formed. If you're interested in any other RV or folks who live in their vehicles, Homes on Wheels people, the number is 423-HOME to call, 423-H-O-M-E. That's the number also of Housing Now in Santa Cruz. Linda LeMaster is kind of taking as best she can information on that, though she herself is disabled and isn't doing too well herself, kind of ill. But you can give that number a call, 423-HOME, if you want to be helpful in forming and or assisting such an organization. I'm sorry, I don't mean to get off your topic. I just thought I'd throw that in.
No, that's great. Finding a home would be wonderful, but that's not really feasible in Santa Cruz for someone who doesn't have enough income.
Well, by Homes on Wheels, I mean, yeah, right. No, I read you are. I mean, it's been said that in the, you know, in the 90s and in the 2000s, affordable housing is a car in many cities.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I didn't hear everything the caller said before. You said that left you kind of, like, speechless or whatever, as far as living in a capitalist society.
Right. He objected to the DNs of people suddenly crying foul when they've been essentially colluding with the capitalist system and now are simply concerned with protecting their assets.
Right.
The value of their, you know, their equity, their investments, their real estate, the inflated prices over the years, that sort of thing. Though for some of them it's not really inflated because they purchased it to live in, not necessarily to make profit off of, and they actually couldn't sell it at a higher profit because of the rent control restrictions in their country.